Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall, joined in the studio by Jay Wynn Russick, our theater critic. Good to see you, Judy.
Always good to be here.
So we're going to talk about Chesapeake Shakespeare Company. They have a long tradition of doing stuff outside in this park in Ellicott City, the Patapsco Female Institute Historic Park. They've been performing there in the summers forever and ever. And the current production is Love's Labor's Lost, a Shakespeare play. So is this an updated version of this play?
It is. Director Aaron Bone Steele has set it in the 1920s. The comedies are good choices to update. They withstand that quite well. And the roaring 20s in this show figures into the costumes. There's some very chic duds on stage. They're designed by Heather Jackson. Before the show, at intermission and between the acts, there's some live old-timey music performed. Not always strictly the 1920s, but there's some Rogers and Hart and some Harold Arlen. At intermission, the actresses playing the main female parts do a really splendid rendition of By the Light of the Silvery Moon. They do four-part close harmony a cappella. Near the end, the whole cast breaks into the Charleston. Kenneth Branagh did a movie back in 2000. You might remember this. He changed the setting to the 1930s with World War II looming. There's nothing that dark in Chesapeake Shakespeare's production. It's more like the calm between two storms. But the 1920s, it's quite lovely. It was a feminist era, women coming into their own, certainly in this country with the 19th Amendment. And the Shakespeare play includes strong female characters. So the time period works. It's charming, and this production really moves.
Now, I know this because you told me, but this is one of Shakespeare's comedies where the women outsmart the men.
Yes.
So do the women seem considerably smarter in this production?
Yes,
as they do in my life, in real life?
Yes, they absolutely do. This is one of Shakespeare's less produced comedies, one of his early comedies, and he definitely gives the women the upper hand. The play pits four women against four men. The men are the King of Navarre and three buddies. The first time we see them, one is carrying a tennis racket, one has golf clubs. So they're playing games, and they're rather frivolous from the start. They're also immature, and they set this very unrealistic goal. The king convinces them to take a vow to devote the next 3 years to serious study and have no contact with women at all. They almost immediately break this vow. The King of France has sent his daughter and three of her ladies in waiting. They're on a diplomatic mission. That assignment alone suggests that these are smart women. And so the battle of the sexes begins. At one point, the French princess refers to a civil war of wits. And that's pretty much what this play is about. They pair off into couples almost at first sight. There's one particularly spiky couple, Berune and Rosaline. They're reminiscent of the embattled lovers in The Taming of the Shrew, which was just a year or so before Love's Labor's Lost. I brought a clip of Berune being rebuffed by Rosaline in their very first scene together.
Did not I dance with you at Brabant once?
Did not I dance with you in Brabant once?
Oh, I know you did.
How needless was it then to ask the question?
You must not be so quick.
It is long of youth that spur me with such questions.
Your wit's too hot. It speeds too fast. 'Twill tire.
Not till it leave the rider in the mire.
Now, fair befall your mask.
Oh, fair fall the face it covers.
And send you many lovers?
Amen, so you be none.
Nay, then will I be gone.
Your wit's too hot. How many times have I said that to Linnell? Jose Guzman and Alana Mitchell, that's Chesapeake Shakespeare's production of Love's Labor's Lost. So, Judy, do mistaken identities figure into the plot? They sort of usually do, right?
Yes, and they do here. There are two incidents of confusion and mix-ups. The first is a deliberate case of mistaken identity, orchestrated by those smart women again. One of those instances of being outwitted. The four men send tokens of love to their sweethearts, and then for some silly reason, the men decide that they're going to disguise themselves as Russians and visit the women. The women find out, they switch tokens, they put on masks, in this case, their dark glasses and veils to fool the men. The women look cool and sophisticated. The men show up with these Russian beards and Russian hats. They look ludicrous. The king is played by Jonathan Jacobs. He acts like a wild and crazy guy, that old Steve Martin, Dan Aykroyd, Saturday Night Live routine. Chesapeake Shakespeare does a really delightful job with this scene. So yes, mix-ups are part of it. And there's another mix-up that involves two love letters that get delivered to the wrong people. You know how that happens.
Oh, that happens. So you've mentioned some of the actors. We've heard a couple of them. How are the performances?
They're pretty well matched. I'll call attention to a couple. Lauren Davis and Alana Michelle are especially sharp as the Princess and Rosaline. No one's going to put anything over these two. The director has cast a woman, Karen V. Lawrence, in the male role of a pompous scholar named Holofernes, and she plays the role as a woman. Kenneth Branagh also did that in his movie. But the casting gives an opportunity for another romance between Holofernes and a local curate. There's a knight named Don Adriano de Armado. He's part of the king's court, and the king admits that he keeps him around to provide comic relief during those tough, reclusive years of study that are coming up. He's played by Michael Boynton, who wears a ponytail and a goatee and a waxed mustache. It's a scenery-chewing role, and Boynton doesn't disappoint in that respect. He does a lot of posturing. He rolls his R's and a lot of other letters. He's clearly full of himself. And he also breaks the vow of avoiding women, and he falls for a country girl who's played by Emily Carroll. She gives a performance that reminded me of Carol Burnett. I brought a clip of Armado guiltily confessing to his page that he's in love. You're going to hear Michael Boynton's exaggerated accent and his exaggerated little cries of dismay.
I will hereupon confess I am in love. And as it is base for a soldier to love, so am I in love with a base wench. I think it a scorn to sigh. Methinks I should outswear Cupid. Comfort me.
It's like Monty Python. Of course I'm French. I didn't think I got this outrageous accent. That's Michael Boynton in Chesapeake Shakespeare's Love's Labor's Lost. So, Judy, this production is performed outside in the ruins at Patapsco Female Institute. It's always fun going there. The setting is beautiful. It's stunning. So what does Chesapeake Shakespeare do with the setting? How do they use it?
Well, this is actually a very appropriate play to do outdoors because the king, he's still trying to stick to that vow of avoiding women at this point at the beginning, and he won't even let the French delegation, the French women, stay at court. So he puts them up in tents outdoors. But beyond that, the designer Daniel O'Brien dresses up the outdoor setting, the ruins. He has an elegant staircase and some classical pillars and urns of flowers. Unlike most comedies, Love's Labor's Lost doesn't end in marriages, but it ends in the potential for marriages. That's why it's Love's Labor's Lost. But Chesapeake Shakespeare has mounted a winning production.
Good for them. Chesapeake Shakespeare Company, their production of Love's Labor's Lost is at the Patapsco Female Institute Historic Park in Ellicott City. It's there through Sunday. And we've got information at wipr.org/midday. So, Judy, next week we're going to check out something at the Olney Theater Center. What are they up to?
Yes, this is a fairly new play called Tiger Style.
Yeah, I'll look forward to it. All right, see you then. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
That's it for us today. A reminder that tomorrow it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll have analysis of yesterday's historic testimony by former Special Counsel Robert Mueller before the House Judiciary and Intelligence Committees, NPR Justice Correspondent Ryan Lucas, and Brookings Institution Senior Fellow Elaine Kamark join me to discuss what we've learned from Mueller's testimony and what impact those hearings might have on impeachment, etc. Plus, cabaret singer Mariah Bonner and pianist Marcus Dagan will be here, and they'll share a few tunes with us. She's a very accomplished cabaret singer. They're going to be singing for us right here in Studio A tomorrow. Lunch for our guest today was provided by Eddie's of Roland Park, presenting outdoor movie nights this summer, including a final screening of Jaws tonight. So bring a blanket or a chair for this movie screening under the stars. It's part of Eddie's of Roland Park's 75th anniversary celebration. You can find details at eddiesofrolandpark.com. Stay tuned. Here and Now is coming up next after the news from NPR at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate your being with us. Have a great day.